You're listening to the Crypto Curry Club podcast with Erica Stanford. Our guests today include David Caniedo, Tax Specialist Product Manager at Accounting, and Chris Smith, Personal Tax Director at BKL.
Hi, everyone. Thank you very much for joining us. We're joined here by David Caniedo, the Crypto Tax Specialist from Accounting, and Chris Smith from BKL, Crypto Tax Accountants based in the UK. We're going to be looking at some of the challenges and confusion surrounding crypto taxes, specifically for the UK, looking also at where DeFi and NFTs will go into this and what changing regulation will bring. So this presentation and webinar is brought to us by Accounting.com. So huge thanks to Accounting for this. And David and Chris, thank you very much for joining. David and Chris, starting with David, if you could just give us a quick 10-20 second introduction to yourselves, please.
Yeah, thank you. Appreciate that. And I'm going to go over to this slide and on myself and Chris, a presenter. So as you said, I'm currently the tax specialist product manager at Accounting. My background is I graduated from the University of Wisconsin-Madison back in 2010. I've been a CPA licensed in the US and I've been practicing really ever since. I've been working in tax. I was a tax manager at a public accounting firms. And starting in 2017, I discovered Bitcoin cryptocurrencies and I went down the rabbit hole, decided to learn everything that I could. So that's what's led to my specialty now and then found myself working with Accounting.
Cool, thank you. And Chris?
Absolutely, yeah. Hi, all. I'm Chris. I'm the Personal Tax Director at BKL. I'm a firm of accountants in London. We've been in the market space for, seems like the beginning, actually. And I say we're one of the leaders within the crypto world. We cover all sectors. My own experiences dealing with investors at a very low level to individuals that are trying to exit with hundreds of millions at the moment. So quite a vast range. And I think we cover the whole spectrum within BKL.
No, thank you very much. David and Chris have put together a short presentation, which we'll get them to go through, and then we'll get on to questions starting from everything from Bitcoin, DeFi, NFTs, and the whole rabbit hole. So if you could share that with us, please, David.
Yeah, thank you. So we do have a presentation prepared, and now the presentation is going to be very high level. So we're not going to go into a lot of details, specifically how things are taxed. There's a lot of information, a lot of guidance out there, but we're going to go mostly high level of some important topics in the UK. And definitely, Chris, feel free to chime in anytime, throughout the slides as needed. Appreciate that. So without further ado, UK stand on crypto, we're going to start talking about this. So first off, the regulations, what do they say? We have cryptocurrencies and crypto assets. Basically, crypto assets or digital assets are use cryptographic techniques to generate a medium of exchange for transactions. Now, cryptocurrencies, utility coins, and security tokens are all different types of crypto assets. And this is one of the things that the HMRC differentiates between the four types of crypto assets. Crypto assets are typically taxed under two different ways in the UK, either capital gains tax or income tax. And capital gain rates are either 10 or 20%, depending on the income. And income tax rates can be from 20 to 45%, depending on other income. And as far as crypto exchanges in the UK, the FCA currently has a limited role in registering any UK-based crypto asset exchanges for anti-money laundering purposes. But this, for example, the FCA enforced some regulations on Binance in June 2021. By August of that same year, the FCA had said that Binance actually complied with all of the requirements.
One bit I'd jump in on there, David, just very briefly. So, to acknowledge the UK, we're run by tax legislation. And at the moment, we don't have tax legislation to cover cryptocurrency, crypto assets. We have guidance, we have a manual effectively from the revenue, which is piggybacking on some other legislation. So there's still a lot of interpretation that's out there, and it's based upon guidance, not physical legislation. So some of the stuff that we're covering today, it is It's followed upon interpretation and the revenue guidance, but there are still particular grey areas that until challenged through court system or actually legislation is written in its own right, there are going to be holes, and the market is moving much quicker than the revenue.
That makes a lot of sense. No, Chris, what's happening right now with current legislation? Do you expect any actual legislation to come through to change the guidance?
No, I mean, it's moving so quickly that I think the revenue would be foolish not to write some specific legislation, because we are just piggybacking off what's already there. My gut feeling is that it's actually going to be quite difficult to write, because the expertise in the revenue in this place is not there. I mean, it's not there, but it's not maybe to the level that the market is moving. I think it's fairer to say.
Yes, and I think that's
Chris, one question to jump in on you there, Chris, because I'm often asked that question, why is regulation so far behind crypto? And obviously crypto is so notoriously fast moving. Do you think Brexit and coronavirus and lockdown have had impacts on delaying that, or is it just a factor that they're not keeping up with fast moving technology?
Yeah, I think it's more of the not keeping up with fast moving technology. I think this was maybe naively seen from the revenue from the outset as something as a bit of a fad that's going to crash, that's not sustainable. And I'm sure some causes still have that view. I don't know, I'm not in the know fully, so it's just my opinion. But we know we're at a position where we really want to see some legislation. We really want to see some things being challenged to give more guidance, because at the moment, in all the will in the world, it's limited. We are still, as advisors, we are still saying, caveating certain advice and saying this is our best opinion, but of course the revenue could disagree.
Yes, it is. It is definitely always challenging trying to provide advice when you don't have specific legislation that's been written. And, as he said, the space is moving so much faster, and it's just difficult for the legislators to keep up. And really, that's, what we're seeing around the world in a lot of different countries too. So as we're already talking about crypto tax regulations, we're going to stick on the topic. So we're going to talk a little bit about the governing law between capital gains taxes and or also for mining and payments, which is income tax. Now, as far as obviously, there's a few different topics. If we're talking about capital gains taxes, that's if you're trading assets, if you're trading crypto, selling a crypto for fiat, or otherwise trading crypto for crypto, this is going to be applicable to capital gain. The capital gains tax is going to be applicable here. Now, income tax is going to be applicable in other types of transactions, and this is in general any types of income transactions. The best way that I'd like to tell people is think about it this way. If you didn't have a coin before and now you have a coin, obviously you can go through a trade and exchange. That's a totally different event. But if if you're mining, staking, if you're providing liquidity in a liquidity pool, if you get an airdrop, if you're getting something new, generally, most of the time, these type of events are going to be taxable events, because these are generally taxable income. You have accession to some type of wealth in all of these events. Obviously, when we're talking about capital gains taxes in the UK, keep in mind that you cannot sell an asset and buy it back in the same 30 days. That's a bed and breakfast rule, which Chris.
We have our matching rules in the UK. Again, it follows existing share scheme rules share rules that are there. Essentially, you can't make the disposal and buy it back in order to get an uplift. It's to avoid the uplift of the base cost. There are some quirks with that people get around. It used to be within the share market be called sort of sell Pepsi, buy Coke. In the crypto world, it may be a sell ether, buy Bitcoin process, and then wait 30 days, sell Bitcoin, buy ether. So you're shifting from one more stable asset to the other asset and trying to get your uplift of base cost that way. Equally, we've seen, we call it bed and spousing, a little bit more difficult within the crypto world per se. It obviously can easily be achieved, but, one person sells and the spouse buys. Again, it's just shifting to get an uplift of base cost. So it's more investment planning.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. And Anyway, moving on, the basis and valuation of tokens in the UK. So that's one of the biggest differences, and I do want to just get into it just a little bit. So that's one of the biggest differences between a lot of different countries in the UK. The fact that, you know, in the US, we have long-term, short-term capital gains. We keep the cost basis depending on the lot that you have. Whereas in the UK, you have this shared pooling method in which you basically pool all the assets. Is that correct, Chris?
It is. And this is exactly where a coin tin shows its value, certainly for us as advisors. Because the where you're moving and certainly making numerous purchases, you do have to pool the cost. You can't identify individual assets. And therefore, when making a disposal, effectively, you're trying to get the average cost. And believe me, to try and do the manual calculations, whilst it's a fairly basic Excel spreadsheet to do the calculations, it takes time to do it. And for us, the knowing that a coin tin are sitting there and able to keep track of this and have the calculations, if you like, in-house within the software, is a huge, huge plus.
Yeah, definitely. You know, it's funny because I've always seen people trying to keep track. You know, whenever I see somebody trying to keep track of cryptos with a spreadsheet, it's like, okay, if you're just going to have one or two buys, maybe that works. But obviously, when you start to have multiple buys, and then especially, you know, okay, so if you're looking at a country like the US where every lot is different, maybe you can do that. But now where you gotta do this shared pooling method in which you gotta average out the cost. I mean, I imagine it's gonna be a nightmare if somebody tries to do it with a spreadsheet, right?
Yeah, I mean we used to literally take over a week to analyze some spreadsheets. And of course that cost has to be passed on to somebody. We can't do it for free. So, you know, a week of a professional's time to just analyze a spreadsheet is an expensive exercise. So, you know, it can be done. But I mean, equally, I come across people that think they're gonna you know, sit and hold. And okay, fine. If you're gonna sit and hold on one particular trade, no problem with that. But you tend to find I sit and hold until I then put X amount in next month and then the following month. And then, or I might just flip something over because I like the look of that. And all of a sudden you find yourself very quickly in a scenario of how am I keeping track of this? And most of the time, you know, people don't. They just get lost 2 years down the line.
Yes, and it's and we all know as accountants, as tax professionals, we all know how much fun and how easy it is to recreate somebody's portfolio when they haven't kept track of anything for 2, 3, 4 years, right?
Indeed.
Anyway, moving on, inheritance tax. We're not going to focus a lot on that, but generally, crypto assets are classified as property for tax purposes here. And for any land transactions, in this case, this would be considered money. So if you're doing lending and borrowing here with crypto, it's considered debt and it's basically subject to SD taxes. We're going to move on. So we're going to talk a little bit about when is crypto tax, the different types of transactions, which I think is what's going to be more interesting to a lot of people rather than the technicals. So obviously software can take care of the technicals, the details. You just have to set your country and everything. But, you know, knowing what type of transactions are taxable, this is really 90% of the battle for a lot of people. So in general, and I say in general because for every rule, there's always an exception. But in general, crypto, if you receive crypto as a gift, if your mother, your father, your brother, whoever it is, you know, if you get somebody gifts your brother, your neighbor, this is not taxable. You know, it's thank him, but it's not taxable for you. If you buy crypto with fiat currency, again, it's no different than just buying property. Than if I just take some cash, you know, some pounds, euros, whatever, dollars, whatever it is, and I just go buy a piece of property, that's not a taxable transaction. However, this is where I tell everyone, this is where you got to start to keep track of your costs. You know, keep any receipts, keep track of any proof of purchases, anything, especially for any large purchases. Donating crypto to charity or MPO, this is not taxable again. And also any internal transactions. And what we mean by internal transactions is if you have crypto in one of your exchanges or wallets that you control, and then you transfer it to another exchange or wallet that you also control, this is basically a transfer to yourself. You're just transferring crypto to your, you know, between different accounts that you control. The key here is that you have to control those accounts. Otherwise, you're basically giving crypto to somebody else and it's a different transaction.
The only one I'd add into that, David, we're seeing more and more is lending as well, by the way. We're seeing fair bits with corporates and so on that we're lending into a corporate, which at the point of loaning in, it's not taxable.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you for that, Chris. Anyway, then case by case. So crypto, as we already mentioned before, is generally regarded as property, not currency. And we have the four different classifications that the HMRC provides. Crypto wallets or exchanges, if they're shut down, that is a very, correct me if I'm wrong, Chris, but that is a very specific situation. You know, in the US, whenever somebody asks about that, there's no formal way to deduct generally those losses. So you generally have to analyze every case individually. And then also Lightning Network transactions, there's, any transactions that are related to other protocols or changes in the networks, this is kind of case by case, not a lot of clear guidance in these cases. And transactions that are always taxable, a blockchain fork. Now, obviously, if we go back to 2017, when Bitcoin went through its fork and you got Bitcoin and Bitcoin Cash, if you had a Bitcoin before and the fork happened and you have Bitcoin and Bitcoin Cash after, that is a taxable event. The receipt of the new Bitcoin Cash would be taxable. Any token airdrops, keeping in mind that airdrops are generally a marketing event where, for example, if you had used Uniswap prior to a certain date, if you logged into your MetaMask wallet or whatever wallet you use Uniswap through, you actually saw 400 UNI tokens airdropped into your wallet. This, as the name implies, they're literally being airdropped. They appear seemingly out of nowhere. Really what happens is that the protocol, somebody sends you the coins. So again, thinking of the fact that if you didn't have coins and now you have additional coins, this is a taxable event. Anytime you're transacting with crypto, really whether you're buying, the only time that it's not going to be taxable are the events that we have on the left side of the screen right now. So if you're buying with fiat, but if you're paying with crypto, if you're trading crypto, generally any crypto transactions, because if we remember that crypto is traded as property, anytime that you transact with crypto, you're probably going to be triggering a taxable event. And obviously this includes selling crypto, trading crypto for crypto, mining crypto, really staking, any crypto that you receive for payments or services, which this would be generally reported as income, really any situation in which you're getting any type of income in crypto is going to be taxable. And I think this, Chris, tell me what you think, but I think, in general, I would say that's a good rule of thumb. If you're getting income, if you're getting a new asset that you didn't have before, generally that means it's a taxable.
If you've received something of value, then the revenue will want a slice of the pie on it ultimately. Generally, if you've received something of nil value, you can't really be taxing it at that point. But later down the line, if it has value and you dispose of something, then again, the revenue are going to want the slice of the pie on it. So don't expect something for nothing.
I suppose no such thing as a free lunch.
No. Well, the revenue will want it, to put food onto it again. It's a piece of its pie, should we say.
Anyway, this is another slide just showing a lot of the same transactions that we already talked about, the different classifications, income, again, payments, gifts, all of these classifications we can handle within our software and accounting. And that's what's good about using crypto software, that generally all you need to know is the economics behind the transaction. Okay, I got an airdrop. I received staking income. I received, I participated in this mining pool. Once you know that, then all you have to do is classify the transactions, and our software is going to take care of basically classifying everything correctly, depending on the country that you have to report. So with that, we're going to get into some best practices in crypto bookkeeping, because I think, I think all of us that have been, who are tax professionals working with crypto clients, we've seen nightmare scenarios where it is just very difficult to, to help certain clients depending really what they have or don't have.
These are bits, David, I mean both of us I'm sure would have come across these, but time and time again it's basic points that come up, and you can see them on screen, but ultimately please don't lose wallet addresses. It is common, and it's it just frankly just causes a problem for us to try and analyze anything. It's a basic that's there. Something that's a little bit more you have to think about, I mean, we've called it their fiat flow, and it's broadly just cash flow. You have to consider that these movements that we've spoken about, asset to asset and so on, there's not necessarily fiat in that transaction, and not just fiat. UK, as we'll move on one of the other points, but a UK bank account that's been funded with fiat. And you have to consider the tax that's going to be paid or needs to be paid. How is it going to be paid? It's often forgot about. How are you actually going to fund it? And we see more and more that people actually funding out of non-invested funds, so separate earned income maybe, or savings from a sterling bank account, to pay tax on something that's earning elsewhere. So you just need to consider the cash flow ramifications of what you're doing. Equally, something that pops up more and more, the errors that are left in things such as a software, such as accounting. For us as advisors, it's difficult for us to fix the errors on a client's behalf, because generally they know the information, otherwise we're making it up. And if something is flagging up as this needs to be corrected, you need input. And it's don't just leave it and think it's going to get resolved. It can be critical on the overall calculation. I mean, David, do you get many queries along those lines, presumably from customers essentially of appointing to help, or do you get asked for help?
Yeah, and that's actually, when we get into this, when we talk about the software a little bit more, I can talk about that more. But that's one of the great things about accounting, about our software, that once you import the data, we have the review steps that basically, our review steps exposes any gaps in the data and basically makes you have to say, okay, I know that I disposed of this asset here. Hey, you don't have a cost basis. You don't have the history for that asset. So with our review steps, you literally have to go to this screen and actually correct all the issues, all the gaps in the data set. And that's one of the biggest benefits of our tool, is the fact that we make the user have to really pay attention to this. Because otherwise, if you really, as they say, garbage in, garbage out, if you don't fix all the errors, it's going to be very difficult to come up with an accurate result. Chris, something that I did want to mention, just to kind of build upon what you were talking about, considering the cash flow and considering, the tax on each trade. I mean, I think we've all seen situations in which somebody, say they buy some Dogecoin and they wrote it all up, all the way up to the first, second week of April that it got it's a high of, I want to say 70 cents or so. Imagine that scenario in which you say, okay, this is doing great. Then you trade it for something else, and then whatever you trade it for actually goes down in value. Now, you had a realized gain from the original Dogecoin, could have been a big gain, but suppose the scenario in which after you trade it for something else, say they decided to trade it for, Zcash or ICP, something that hasn't performed as well, goes down in value, and now you have to pay that tax, but you don't have the cash flow, you don't have the funds to do it with. So that is, that is just a point that I definitely want to make people make sure that they pay attention to, always consider the tax impact of any trades they're making.
This is where, it's an everyday problem. You're seeing it. It's this time of year when it really hits, when you're completing tax returns late on in the year and you're advising clients that within the next 7-10 days, you've got a tax liability of X. And all of a sudden, you get my portfolio is not performing that well at the moment. I can't realize any gains to fund the tax. Unfortunately, the revenue won't wait. They'll see it, that they've given you plenty of time, and when you run the numbers, actually you do get plenty of time to account for the tax that's due. So ultimately don't leave it, consider it as you go along. And that's one of the next points, as we said, complete it as you go along. And that's really running your accounting reports, doing your bookkeeping I at least once a month. When you're making trades, if you know you've made a substantial gain somewhere, then try to account for the tax on that gain. Now that may be moving something back, as I say, going back into fiat, back into a UK bank account to try to account for some tax on that trade. Because you're going to have a gain. You may not have a liability at the end of the year if you've got losses to utilize, or if you're under exemptions and so on. But you've got a gain. So the question mark is, do you account for some tax on that? And then equally, say the fiat into a relevant bank account. Unlike BKL, the revenue, they don't take crypto as payment. It's coming from a UK bank account. It's coming from a Ray bank account, sorry, that you can pay your tax. So the difficulty is making sure you get the cash to be able to pay broadly. Given the date that we're doing this presentation, we are extremely close to a tax filing deadline, and the majority of individuals will leave things to the last minute. It's not good from a cash flow point of view. It really doesn't help individuals just putting it to the back of your mind and just leaving it. To be the successful individuals we really see are on top of things, do have in mind what's coming up. And broadly, as soon as the 5th of April ticked by, from the 6th of April, you can start completing your taxes. And again, using software, make use of it, because the press of the click of a button, you've effectively got your end of year tax report. And if you do that in April, you've got till the following January to actually pay the tax. So it's plenty of time to have an understanding of what's going to be due months ahead. So I would always make sure you're organised and just don't leave things to the last minute. The other bit that's just worth really touching upon there quickly was, I know there's the 31st of January deadline approaching. Mm-hmm. That is still a deadline. There's press about a so-called extension. Technically, for the UK filing, it's not an extension to the filing date. There's a 31st of January filing date, which is still there. The revenue have, however, said due to COVID issues, ongoing matters, they're going to not extend the deadline, but they're going to accept late returns. And as long as conditions met, tax is still being paid, then they won't fine you if the return goes in by the 28th of February. So it does sound like an extension, but technically, and we like technicalities in the professional world, it's still late. So a return gets marked as a late return, even though you will not get a fine for submitting a late return if it's done so by the 20th of February. So for everyone out there that hasn't got the tax return in, do please try and get it in by the deadline. If not, you've got a little bit of leeway.
So basically, for the first year in a while, you can file late. You can have a late tax return, but actually have no penalties and still kind of be okay with this deadline of extension of whatever we want to call it, not official extension or whatever we want to say.
Yeah, indeed.
I totally agree with you, and yeah, definitely want to reiterate on that point. Definitely don't leave clients until the last minute, even if you're using a tax professional, a CPA. No tax professional likes to get information the day before filing. And believe me, every tax professional is super busy the last 4 weeks leading to filing deadlines. So if you wait, the longer you wait, the harder it's going to be for that person to really put a lot of dedication and attention to your account. And the other point, about completing it, as you go along, is the fact that a lot of software, including our software at CoinTing, we double up as a tracker. So if you have accounts in 5, 10, 15 different wallets and exchanges, it's not very convenient to open up every single wallet exchange every morning just to see where positions are at. So that's part of the beauty of our software, that we double up as a tracker, so you can see in one place in your app, you can see how you're doing day to day. And when you keep track of things every day, your portfolio is always going to be updated, and then tax compliance is going to be a lot easier.
And the other real, I think I might touch on it later on the presentation, but another real point on this is if you find a good advisor who should be advising as well, not just dealing with compliance work, you should be looking to obtain good, solid tax advice, financial advice from an advisor. And to enable them to do that, giving people more time. It's not time to give them more time to sort of sit there and ponder. Procrastinate, etc. It's actually just so we can see a bigger picture. Mm-hmm. Honestly, last minute planning is never good planning at all. And we've got a tax, and that's different to the tax filing deadline. The main thing is the tax year at this point. So we have a tax year approaching in April, 5th of April. We're currently in a 21-22 tax year, and to enable us to plan for this current year, it would be lovely to already know what the 2021 information looked like. And of course, if we're only submitting that now, last minute, it gives us a couple of months to really rush through some potential planning points.
Yeah, and there's always a lot more value in actually planning what time, actually planning your next steps, as opposed to just being reactive and having to really react because you're out of time. So definitely a good point, Chris. Now, as we're talking about crypto accountants, what to look for in a crypto accountant if you're considering working with a crypto accountant, tax professional, CPA? Here's some of the things that you should really be looking at, because it is, I'm not gonna lie, it's very difficult to find somebody that has experience in the crypto industry and who can help you. So again, you know, looking at their experience, have they worked in crypto before? Do they have other clients in that, you know, in this industry? At the end of the day, you don't want to be paying a professional 200 pounds an hour or so to learn what is Bitcoin and what is a Bitcoin wallet. That is one of the risks that you take if you go with somebody who doesn't have experience in this space. You know, do they speak the same language? Do they know what a crypto wallet is? Do they know what a cold wallet, a hot wallet, DeFi, you know, what hodling is? All these different crypto terms that are very relevant, you know, when you're doing transactions. What is a liquidity pool? All these type of things. Online articles, have they written anything? You know, is there's, because there's such a shortage for crypto tax accountants, there's anybody who is active in the space tends to write articles, tends to be a thought leader, because at the end of the day, we don't have guidance for a lot of these transactions. So it is not uncommon to see a lot of us writing articles and really providing thought leadership in the space. Are they at a null service firm? You know, can they deal with planning another type of work? You know, do they have the availability, or are they 99% busy with traditional type of businesses, in which case the time that they can devote to crypto is not going to be that big? And last but not least, obviously, you pay in crypto. Do they accept crypto? And it sounds like you guys do at BKL, right,
Chris? Yeah, there's not many of us that do, but you know, in all seriousness, it's a really key point, because when we go back to cash flow, having the ability to pay for services with crypto assets is a big attraction, because the fiat may be utilized for other means, living or taxes, etc. I mean, just touch on those points. Some of those are really key. The all service firm, you know, people sometimes are just governed by price. Who's going to offer me the cheapest service to do a tax return? And you have to ask yourself, what service are you looking for? Do you want somebody just to plug in some numbers and produce a tax return, you know, a lip service effectively? And all they're doing is form filling. It may be a small firm, it may be unqualified individuals that may be doing that, just using a bit of software. And you can get that for a relatively small fee. But I think people should be looking at the bigger picture, looking at actually, are there other opportunities, and can the advisors advise upon it? Can they act upon it? You know, when we talk about corporates, when we talk about various other structures to put in place, and I'm not talking about tax avoidance structures or anything that's you know, risque and the revenue are going to come after. I'm talking about good, safe planning points, and it's important for any firm you speak to, you know, do you feel that they can offer that level of service for the right fee? There will be large firms on the market that will offer that level of service at a very high cost, but you know, it's I think you need to do the research, and you need to be asking and understanding yourself. What are you after from an advisor?
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, what I would recommend is before you sign up with anyone, you know, have a conversation with them, have a call, go to their office, and really just have a conversation. See if they understand you. See if they understand the industry. And again, if it is a good fit, because nothing's going to be worse than going to somebody who's not a good fit, you know. Between the potential errors, potential fees you're going to be paying, you want to find the right person if you're going to be using professional help.
We do this one on there, which I didn't put, David, actually, as well. It's just to do bear in mind. There's something, a service we certainly BK offer, and most accountants do, it's called fee protection service. Effectively, it's a form of insurance policy against a revenue inquiry. And it's, you know, you have an advisor that completes your return for a relatively small fee. You'll be covered that if the revenue do decide to raise an inquiry into that tax return and ask some questions, then the professional fees in dealing with that inquiry, the individual won't meet, is covered under the policy. And, you know, that gives, again, good reputable firms will offer that. It gives you that assurance that this is an emerging sector still. The revenue, as we've discussed, haven't written legislation on this, so things are open to interpretation. Generally, that means that an inquiry could be on the cards. Even if you're not doing heavy in the market, but have got a few things in say Coinbase. I mean, we've seen the letters come out from revenue to users at Coinbase, and you know, the inquiries into those returns. I'd rather have an easier night's sleep, knowing I've got a bit of cover there, essentially, in case the revenue do come knocking or the letter comes through the letterbox in the morning.
Yes, absolutely. Always best to have filed everything in a compliant manner so you can rest easy at night.
Indeed.
Anyway, talking about tools for crypto taxes, and we're going to go through this briefly. Obviously, there's a lot of regulations. Whether we're looking at the UK, at the HMRC, at the US, the IRS, Australia, the ATO, any other countries, there's a lot of regulations. Every tax authority is obviously looking for any crypto traders to pay any tax on any gains that they've realized. After all, this asset class has grown exponentially in value, so a lot of gains have been made. Again, also with this, there's AML considerations. When you actually take all these gains and you try to move them onto the bank account, and you're trying to, you know, if a bank sees a deposit of $100,000, you know, that's kind of difficult to explain. So a lot of these regulations that we've seen in the headlines and such are driving the need for a lot of the software, because we are dealing with a space, cryptocurrency, blockchain, that we just don't have the information reporting that we have in the securities industry and the securities world. So really the problem that we have is that crypto is moving at a much too fast space for regulators and legislators to be able to keep up. I mean, it's very difficult, when you consider that just a couple of years ago, we were talking about, back in 2017, we were talking about IPOs. 2020, DeFi became very hot. 2021, NFTs became very hot. So, and now we're talking about play to earn too. What's trending is always very new, and the space is moving very fast. That makes it very difficult for any legislators and also software, anybody in the compliance world, to be able to keep up. So the challenge is that as the space grows, things are just going to become more complex. And it is absolutely critical to keep track of everything. Again, keeping track of your cost documentation, all these documents are going to be critical. So what does our software do? Basically, with our software, with a coin thing, as I already mentioned earlier, we are a cryptocurrency tracker first and foremost. So you can connect all of your accounts, whether it's a Coinbase, Kraken, Gemini, MetaMask, any DeFi accounts also. You can connect all of these accounts, and by connecting all of the accounts, you're basically going to be recreating your crypto portfolio within our platform. Once you can recreate the crypto portfolio, when you consider about some of the things that we talked about, you know, the pooling method in the UK, you know, the cost basis, the valuation of these assets, you need to consider an investor's portfolio as a whole, including every single wallet and exchange that they own. So by connecting everything with crypto software, this is really the only way that we can, that anybody can get the correct answer on all the complex transactions. And once you have everything connected, we have very country-specific tax reports. So obviously, Chris has joined us today with BKL. We work with Chris, we work with other partners in any country that we support. So we make sure that our tax reports are going to be very specific to any regulations in the country. You know, any tax reports that you get for the UK, they're going to have the pooling methods, they're going to be accurate based on the reporting that you guys need to do. So this is something that we make very sure of. Basically, we have the most up-to-date regulations and rules in our software.
And we provide those reports to the revenue. We attach them to the tax returns. It's good practice we've got nothing to hide. Clients don't have anything to hide. And with capital gains, you should be attaching computations anyway to tax returns. So it makes our lives easier when we can say we've got, you know, work with a good partner that's produced these reports that we're actually happy for the revenue to look at and scrutinize. And we do that. We do that on a daily basis.
Yeah, no, definitely. And because, I mean, at the end of the day, a few jurisdictions around the world, you know, we have China that's kicking out miners. However, for the most part, the UK, other countries like the US are crypto friendly for the most part. They're not saying crypto is illegal, don't hold these assets. The only thing that they're saying is, hey, we know you've made some gains, please just report everything correctly, just be compliant. If you're compliant, you really don't have anything to worry about at night. I'm not going to spend much time in this slide because we've already kind of talked about, you know, a lot of the benefits of a coin thing. And, you know, if anybody wants to ask, okay, what makes a coin thing, your platform, better than your other competitors? I'll say, you know, two things that I would say generally are UX, basically our user experience and our user interface. It's probably one of the easiest that you're going to find. The way they lay out your wallets and exchanges, it is very simple for anybody to learn how to use it in probably less than 5 minutes. Again, we connect all of your wallets and exchanges. And the other thing that I would say makes Acointing unique is the fact that we expose any errors in the data set. So if there are gaps, if we don't have the basis for this asset, if something just doesn't make sense, we're going to expose these pieces in the review steps and make the taxpayers have to go say, hey, what is this transaction? Please complete the basis, you know, or otherwise reconcile the transaction. But we're not going to hide these errors. We're going to expose them so that you have to get the right answer. So now with that, that's all that we have prepared. And at this moment, I'm sure there's a lot of questions, probably, you know, I'm sure a lot of you are wondering DeFi, NFT, some of these hot topics. So we'll open it up for questions now.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Yeah, no, there's a number of questions come through and I've got a few of my own. First, burning question from somebody listening as a specific question about somebody who had to exchange their CSE token on the Zoom exchange, the XUMM exchange, otherwise they'd have lost them. Is that movement taxable, i.e. the exchange was done by sort of force because that they would have otherwise lost the tokens?
Well, yes, unfortunately, it's the fact that you've actually disposed of an asset and lost the rights over that asset. You know, if it's gone and it's no longer in your ownership, then it's been exchanged for something else of value, then absolutely it's a taxable event at that point.
Okay, thank you. And they're also asking about staking ADA specifically, and are staking rewards seen as income tax?
Yeah, so staking, the revenue, they try to simplify it to some degree to put it to a form of interest effectively. So you're putting an asset up, and in relation to putting the asset up, you're generating a return. So that return, you've still got the original asset. So there's no capital disposal anywhere. You still have that asset. Therefore, mm-hmm. you're receiving a return on that asset, and that's subject to income tax rather than capital gains tax. And to give the revenue credit on this, I can see why they're matching things up to try and simplify. And it's no different than you put in cash mm-hmm. in a bank. And when the banks a few years back mm-hmm. did actually give you a return on some cash, it's treated as income because the cash is still there. So you're generating a return on the asset that you're placing will be subject to income tax.
Okay, thank you. And you touched briefly on the sort of the concept of crypto lending. And obviously we're seeing huge rises in that, both on a sort of small scale as well as on an institutional scale. Could you just give a sort of a brief minutes overview?
Yeah, and there's different contexts in which this is happening. I mean, from a planning point of view, there's some opportunities whereby individuals have a large value, large asset, and they want to trade on that asset. And from a tax angle, we're suggesting for tax and commercial reasons, it's better to have a certain asset within a company. And by transferring the ownership of that asset into a company in its own right is a taxable event, whereby we look at particular structures where the asset can be loaned into a company for a charge and for a genuine commercial transaction that's gone on. That's not treated as a disposal at that point. That particular transaction, say, is a fairly complex matter, but it's not for everybody. But there's options there. We're equally seeing more and more nowadays in the marketplace where, again, it's seen that an asset is being put up as a loan effectively, and again, it is repayable, and somebody's generally going to get a form of stake and again a form of return for loaning that in. Now, bear in mind that that form of return would be treated as income, so similar like the staking, essentially the same thing. Mm-hmm. But you've just got a separate agreement where the overriding asset has been loaned, and that is expected to be returned in full at a designated point in time.
Okay, thank you. And somebody's asking about tokens that were effectively lost to the blockchain, as does sometimes happen in crypto transactions. They tried to transfer them into a different currency, XDCC, into XDC, and they got lost and can't be used. How would that work?
So it's an interesting one, actually, the losses side of things, because there's some scenarios which bizarrely the revenue don't want to allow the capital losses. If I take this, there's press on, you know, X people that have lost hard drives to rubbish dumps somewhere, recycling centers and so on, and high value Bitcoin. And they, as it stands at the moment, those individuals wouldn't be able to claim a capital loss because they haven't actually lost the asset. And so, right, they still own the asset. It's just lost in somewhere in a tip in wherever it may be, Dartford or whatever.
But they wouldn't have to pay tax on that, the guy who lost
it. So they wouldn't pay tax on that, but they haven't realised any gain on it. So equally, they're not going to be able to realise the loss and offset it anywhere else because they still own the asset. So generally, for individuals that have actually lost an asset in its own right, they don't own it anymore. Mm-hmm. It's been stolen from an exchange and there's definitely no chance of getting that back. Then that's where you're more likely to be able to utilise the capital loss.
Okay. No, thank you. So the chap who asked about the transferring the tokens, it was he specified that he had to transfer the CCCSC and had to swap them, otherwise they would have been void. So it's not that they were lost, but that he had to transfer them on an exchange as they were migrating to a different token.
So if he hasn't actually changed the ownership of the token, it's the same token that's owned.
It's a different token, but owned by the same person.
So it goes back to the same point. If it's a different token, it's effectively been swapped into a different token, then you've lost the right to that token. And put it to non-crypto assets, although you can't do this in the real world, you know, you've got Marks and Spencer shares. If I sell those or for cash, there's obviously a disposal there. Now, I don't have the ability, but if I was just to be able to swap those for Lloyds Bank shares, the same difference, I've disposed of those Marks and Spencer shares.
Okay, yeah.
You know, it is treated as a disposal at that point and a market value disposal. So even though
it was a swap effectively, it's treated as a disposal.
Yeah, it's still treated as a disposal.
So even though it was under force effectively because they had no... for clarification.
I think the force comes into it is the ownership of the asset and the asset class. So the fact that the asset is still at the same, it's changed its class, it's gone into a different token, then the revenue will treat it as a disposal at that point.
Okay, no, thank you. And somebody is asking about the capital gains tax allowance per individual. How does it work if a married couple do everything through one individual account on Coinbase, such as the money in and out of the Coinbase account comes from one bank account in one of their names in a sole bank account, but the money is still joint at the point of deposit and withdrawal. Capital gains tax allowances.
It's a good basic planning point, and it's one. We're very different from the US in terms of and other countries in terms of marriage and allowances, in that individuals get allowances in their own right, and you can hold joint assets. So there's nothing to say that the portfolio essentially isn't held jointly and disposed of jointly, therefore doubling up on allowances. What you'd want, and I don't believe within, and correct me if I'm wrong with it, David, I don't think within a Cointin you can show a portfolio as being held jointly, therefore doubling up on the allowances.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. So you're not going to be able to get the report that way, but there's nothing to say that that's not actually happened.
Mm-hmm. Okay,
So you would have two allowances. The only thing I would add would be you'd want to ensure you're not fraudulently claiming the allowances. You know, are they actually joint? When if you're going into a whatever, transferring back into fiat, is the account, a joint account that it's going into, does the spouse have a right to that income? You just don't, you don't want to manipulate, you want to make sure that it is actually jointly owned.
Okay, no, thank you. And so the person with the CCSC token is saying they just moved it to a different wallet. And we're told it was a disposal and therefore not taxable.
If it's still the same token, it's moved to a different wallet, there is not a disposal at that point.
Okay.
You've still got the ownership of that token. Fine. So okay. No disposal.
Cool. No, thank you for clarifying that. Happy now. Thank you for that. Sorry, that was probably a few confusions.
It's okay.
And if we can just please get onto the rabbit hole just in a few minutes of DeFi and NFTs. I mean, obviously with crypto, you've got the main cryptocurrencies and the main exchanges and so forth. But now, of course, you've got the fast growing world of DeFi and decentralized exchanges run out of every country around the world. And, you know, with no sort of limits on them and no KYC and so forth. I mean, how does that work? And I mean, the next question then is, you've got all of the NFT marketplaces and NFTs booming and so forth. How are they treated? Are they treated the same as crypto?
David, do you want to pick up on that from a coin point?
Yeah, I can start a little bit. So a couple of pieces there. Obviously, with DeFi, you know, it's not specifically DeFi itself, but it's the fact that there's a lot of different protocols. So one of the challenges from the software standpoint is the fact that if you're doing DeFi, if you're trading on a DEX, providing liquidity, you know, if you're working with Ethereum, it's not quite the same if you switch over to the Binance chain, if you switch to Solana, if you switch to Avax. Like, every different chain is very different in terms of the inputs. So, you know, from the software development standpoint, we have to basically develop and program all of that. Now, in terms of the transaction specifically, generally we see the same. I mean, again, in DeFi, we tend to see a lot of swaps, a lot of, you know, liquidity pools and stuff like that. Those tend to be taxed the same way. The challenge in all that is, number one, the guidance. So we don't have a lot of guidance for a lot of areas, such as, again, you know, like liquidity pools, a lot of these advanced transactions, yield farming, a lot of these things. So the guidance is a challenge. But then number two, when you consider the guidance and also the fact that all of these protocols are, you know, they're popping up and there's more and more different protocols, more different dApps that you can interact with, that they don't provide any type of centralized reports. So that's another one of the challenges, because if you're using a centralized exchange, you can always download your trading history. Sometimes these dApps don't necessarily have all the records. So we need to rely on the blockchain a little bit more, which that by itself is a challenge. So again, you know, when you combine that with the lack of guidance and just tracking and, you know, the way that all these transactions come through, it is definitely a challenge. In terms of NFTs, that is NFTs, we... So there's not a lot of specific guidance in NFTs, but in general, you know, NFTs are non-fungible tokens. All that means is that they're basically, as opposed to normal crypto assets, Bitcoin, Ethereum, those type of assets are fungible tokens. That just means that every single crypto asset, you can trade it for another one. One Bitcoin is no different than another one. That's what it means, that they're fungible. NFTs, the non-fungible classification, is just meaning that every single one is unique. So that's really just a type of a crypto asset. So NFTs fall underneath the crypto asset classification, but even then, there's a lot of different issues. Mm-hmm. Different marketplaces, you know, they're trading on different blockchains. So again, linking the data can be a challenge. There's other challenges with NFTs, such as, are you creating the NFTs? Are you trading them as a capital investment? You know, are you a dealer in NFTs? So there's other considerations that we really don't have any guidance on, that we really have to think through it carefully. Now, as far as the coining, DeFi, again, that's, we do handle DeFi, but that depends on the protocol you're trading with. So every day our developers are working very hard to add the latest and newest blockchains that are using DeFi so that we can link everything. And in terms of NFTs, as of now, we don't have a great solution yet, but we're working very hard on this and we should have something coming out first quarter of 2022. To be able to integrate and track any NFTs also.
I think the NFTs is an interesting one that I think, again, the revenue will look to try and simplify in their mind. And it's very much as you've alluded to, David, are you a creator? Are you an investor, trader, dealer, et cetera? And you have to consider that. Generally, if you're creating, you're going to be subject to income tax because you're more akin to, you know, more, I don't want to put it necessarily to artistic actions, but you're creating. You don't own the asset, you're just created the asset. So that's more towards a trade and income tax viewpoint. But if you are looking to invest, then again, you come back to basics with it, and you're purchasing an asset for a value, and you're receiving potentially an asset for a value. And therefore, when you dispose of that, you no longer hold the right to that asset. Have you made a profit or a loss on that asset? And yes, trying to keep records for it and so on, but that's a secondary point. The first point, have you made a profit on that asset? I don't as yet see the revenue, or I can't imagine the revenue taking the approach of saying we'll make exempt assets. So we'll put NFTs as maybe in an exempt category alongside some other CGT assets. I don't get that suspicion yet. I think they'll look to collect tax where they can.
Some people are saying that NFTs are arts and paintings aren't taxable, or fine wine, for example. But is it because they're associated with crypto in some way?
Yeah, it's that. Unfortunately, whilst it can be artistic, creative, you know, it's not fine wine. I mean, one would argue it's a piece of art, but that's not what we're seeing at the moment, or certainly interpreting it as. It's seen as a crypto asset that has a value. And, you know, it, to some extent, it doesn't help when there are potentially high value trades going on for these NFTs, that I think, you know, there will be people, the revenue is a business. You know, maybe that's, I'll say, I think it's reality, and where they can see potential revenue stream of targeting something, going, well, hold on, there's high value NFTs going through auctions. Again, why should we not get a piece of that?
Okay, thank you. And there's just lastly, conscious of time, but there's a couple questions about airdrops coming through. You mentioned that airdrops are subject to income tax, but there's a couple questions about, are all airdrops taxable? And someone asking whether airdrops are only liable for income tax if something is done to earn the airdrop, as opposed to it just being a gift from a developer, where some are just sent sort of without the knowledge of recipients.
Which is broadly right. If you've received something as a gift, as I think we had up on a slide prior, right. you haven't actually done anything for that airdrop. Somebody's just said, here you go, there's nothing for it, then you've received something at that point, there's no income tax on that. You've got to be careful, because the revenue, if they do inquire into a return, they may want some kind of proof to that effect, but it does happen. Mm-hmm. You do see I know on the Coinbases of this world and so on, nowadays they'll put some airdrops on, and what they do is ask a few questions about the particular asset, and you're actually doing something to earn that. Therefore, you're taking part, whether it be in a marketing survey or you're carrying out some questions, and you're therefore you're doing something for that airdrop. So it comes in at a value, and it's subject to income tax at that point. Okay, but there are certainly instances where you could receive it with no income tax attached to it.
Got you. Thank you. I mean, that sounds quite sort of a grey area at best.
Not necessarily grey. I more so that you've just got to be, if something's of substantial value as an airdrop, it would raise a flag. Okay. And you're not probably as taxable. I'd raise a flag on it, and I'd want to almost have some evidence to back up that I haven't done anything for that. Got airdrop.
And they're just questioning, is it income tax or capital gains for airdrops?
Income tax primarily.
Okay, thank you.
I mean, of course, everything can be both, because it's income tax at the point of receipt, but that goes up in value over a period of time, and it's disposed of for a gain more than what you've received value you've received it at. It's going to be subject to capital gains tax at that point you dispose of it.
Thank you. And just a last question, that Songbird and Sparks tokens aren't taxable. I must confess, I hadn't heard of Songbird or Sparks tokens.
I haven't heard of her Songbird or Sparks tokens.
Okay. What we'll do, I'll send your email address, if that's okay, to
absolutely
to attendees, and then people listening in, and then they can ask specifics.
I mean, I would, this is one of the things we sort of alluded to earlier on, that as advisors, we try to keep up to date with the market, and you know, I'm sure Quentin do as well, but generally the market is moving a lot faster than what we are. So there will always be there will always be tokens, terminologies, etc., that we've got to catch up on.
As of everything, aware of time. Thank you both so much to David and Chris for joining us and sharing all of that content. I know a lot of people are asking about replays and watching this later. So if it's okay to share both your contact details with them. But huge thanks to Chris and David for giving up your time and sharing that knowledge, and to people who joined.
No problem.
Thank you.
This episode of Crypto Curry Club is brought to you by Accounting. Accounting.com.